welcome to the 27th episode of The Fan and the Fraud.
That's this episode.
That's
this one.
That's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
You're joined today live from the Sin Studios by myself, Max, and Nick on this very special Tuesday afternoon. But before we get into the show, Nick, would you care to tell our listeners a little bit about what they've got themselves into?
Oh.
If you have to, come on, you got to pull your weight. Come on,
fine.
We're waiting.
No,
let's get into
it's
it.
The Fan, the Fraud. We do a film each week. One of us has seen it, one of us hasn't, and we watch it before the show and we talk about it. And this week, it's Max is the fan and
yep.
I'm the fraud. Before we get into the film of the week,
oh, yep.
what's our Instagram? Where can they find us on the Instagram lines?
It's shocking that you don't remember.
But I don't know.
It's the fan, the fraud, sin, all lowercase.
No spaces.
Additionally, you can find us on LinkedIn, Spotify. What's we on? Letterboxd.
Yep, not that we use it.
No, but we'll get to it. Yeah, we are on MySpace, yeah. We aren't joking, by the way. You can actually find
can
us,
find
on,
us
MySpace.
On MySpace.
It's all in our link tree on our Instagram bio.
We were going to open up Twitter, but...
Well,
probably
by the time we get an account set up, that'll be gone, so...
Probably shouldn't,
yeah.
Probably shouldn't go there.
Well, actually, I just realized we could pay $8 and be verified on Twitter. It'd actually be quite good. Maybe we'll look into that. So, yeah, you can find us pretty much anywhere. Yeah, that's the sound of... board. Nick's having a bit of fun trying it out this week. Hopefully that gets a few uses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be a bit of fun. But
yes.
You know what we should do? Let's play our first song, and when we come back, we'll tell our listeners the film we're discussing, and hopefully they can guess it.
Is there anything else we want to talk about before we get into the film of the week? I got sauce today.
Oh, tell them.
I'll come to the studios.
Yep. Classic.
Walking, crossing from Melbourne Central over to where the State Library is to get in studios.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's above me except for a tree. Something lands on me. What is it? Tomato sauce. Where'd it come from? I don't know.
Thank God you had a meat pie at the time, so you just poured that on. You scraped that on your shirt sleeve. Got all the tomato sauce off.
I got sauced by what? There's no one.
That's just that. Now that's divine intervention. Lord, give me a sign. There's your sign.
It didn't even come from behind. It came from above because it landed on top of me.
From above.
Anyway, have you ever been sourced? Dial in to the Sin Studios.
Yes.
Not that you can.
No.
You can message me on message us on Instagram.
Yeah.
Have you been
sourced?
Have you ever been? Wait, actually, that's another euphemism for getting drunk.
Oh.
Not that way.
No,
have you ever been tomato sourced?
Send us a message at TheFanTheFraudSin on Instagram, all lowercase, no spaces, if this has ever happened to you. But let's get into our first song of the day.
And if you guess the film, I don't know.
Good for you, I guess. I don't know. You want a medal or something? The 1954 classic Rear Window, directed by Sir Alfred Hitchcock. Yep.
Knighted by Queen Elizabeth II in 1980, but he wasn't there to accept the prize.
He was busy.
The knighthood, because he was not in the country, so they sent it to the studios where he was working.
There you go. Well, now, you're the fan of the fraud.
Fact. Well, I know about him.
All right, that's okay. You've stolen my thunder a little bit there, but that's all right. Look, before we get into
yes.
movie in a minute, I think it's time for This Week in Movie History.
Oh, I haven't gotten my crap. I tell you what,
you go
first.
Oh, well done. All right, let's get into This Week in Movie History. So,
there you go. Jingle. Getting ahead of yourself.
Marty! You've got to come back with me!
Where?
Back to This Week in Movie History.
Gotta go back.
Gone back. Whoa!
We're back.
I can't believe it's the past now.
All right, and this is actually quite a big week in movie history. There's actually quite a few significant events.
Okay.
So, in 1944, the musical Meet Me in St. Louis, starring Judy Garland, premieres for the first time in St. Louis.
Oh.
St. Louis, however you pronounce it.
St. Louis. St. Louis.
Also, interesting, in 1965, Miss Goodall and the Wild Chimpanzees, a documentary about Jane Goodall as she studied and lived with the chimpanzees, airs on CBS and is watched by 25 million people.
I'm going to be honest, you prefaced it saying this was a big week.
That is a big week. Yeah. The BBC officially unbans I Am the Walrus by the Beatles.
No, it banned.
Oh, they did ban it? No, oh, unofficially, but I'm not good at, reading it.
I'll take the next one.
All right.
It's also the first ever interracial TV kiss.
Yes.
1968, Star Trek, Captain Kirk and Uhura.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Today's birthday, happy birthday, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, yeah.
Good friend Jamie, good friend Scarlett Johansson, for those not, you know, don't know her that well, her birthday as well.
Yep.
And Rodney Dangerfield's birthday.
Okay.
Yeah.
And his brother, Rodney, playing at Safe Field. also a big one, in 1995, Toy Story is the first feature-length film completely created using computer-generated imagery, is released.
That's so good. That's a good
actually
one.
A big one.
Well, is that it for this week?
I think that's kind
got
of...
Got anything it. Else?
That's all I got, to be honest. Have you got an obscure TV channel that started broadcasting out of somewhere in Midland,
maybe
America?
I do. WITF TV Channel 33 in Harrisburg, yeah. Hershey. PBS, 1964, began broadcasting, baby.
Wow, now that is exciting.
It is very exciting.
Thank God I was sitting down for that, because I don't think I could have taken that news standing up.
All right, we're going back to the present day, I think.
Yep.
Here we go, we're going back. Back in present.
All right, now, just before we get into movie in a minute, just want to play this, because are you familiar with Peter Hellyer's film podcast, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet? Have you ever heard of this?
No.
All right, so we're just going to play a clip here.
Is this
because, yes, okay. because we may run into a problem here. So okay. I'm just going to play the clip here.
All right, here we go. Here's uh-oh.
Yeah, we'll see how we feel.
G'day, Peter Hellyer here for You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet. My guest this week is my great mate and a very funny comedian from Rosehaven, Luke McGregor, Mad Dog McGregor. What film hadn't you seen until this week?
I hadn't seen The Godfather.
How is that possible? It's one of my favourite films of all time. We're going to be chatting about it. McGregor, do a quick Pacino impression.
Oh, you got it. I'm Al Pacino.
Right, so I've done a bit of research.
Wait, when did that episode air?
Yeah, so here's the thing.
What are you implying right now?
You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet is a film podcast of Peter Hellyer.
Why
are you
telling?
We're
not talking about this.
We
can't talk.
Description is: chain of movie lovers about classic and beloved movies they hadn't got around to seeing until now.
Mm.
The first episode was The Lion King with Tom Gleason in June of 2020. So we may need to contact the Fan the Fraud legal team.
Okay, look, that being said, when we got the idea of the show, the whole thing was that we knew there'd been shows who have done this before.
Yes.
The whole thing about we're watching it before that we should have seen.
Yes.
But no one's done it like us.
No. Not that we're aware
not
of.
Not that there's two hosts where we alternate and
yes,
that,
okay.
So we're original.
Okay, we are original. I just thought I'd bring that to your attention, so if we need to pass that on to our legal team, we can. just thought I would bring that up.
But, okay.
Okay, just want to double check that with
so,
you.
So, the first week,
yep.
Rear Window, I had never seen before. You had seen for school because you studied it in year 12 English, not I did literature.
Oh, because you're just...
Not saying I'm better, but you know.
I can't hear you all the way up there on your high horse up there.
Reading my poems and my plays and literature.
Yeah, well done.
but, yep, we watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's a masterpiece.
It's pretty good.
We'll get into movie in a minute. And I'll summarise. Obviously, spoilers for the film.
Then again,
it is made in 1954.
You have had quite a bit of time to watch it.
Here we go. Okay, movie in a minute on Fan the Fraud on. Oh, alright, so basically, LB Jeffrey sees this guy, he's broken his leg, oh no, he's stuck in his house, and he keeps, like, looking out his window, watching to, like, all kind of quirky people doing their own things. And then he sees this guy and his wife, who's, like, bedridden, and then one day, oh no, the wife's gone, and he notices the guy leaving the house multiple times that night with the suitcase, and he's like, oh my god, what's he doing? And then there's, like, a saw, and he's like, well, I think he killed his wife. So he contacts his cop friend, he's like, I think he killed his wife. And the cop friend's like, I don't think he killed his wife. He's like, I think he did. And then his beautiful wife's, like, old girlfriend's like, I think he killed his wife. And then they investigate the crime, and there's, like, a flower bed, and it's, like, the flowers, they look like they're dying. There's something buried in the flower bed. And then they go investigate, and then Lisa breaks into the house, and then he comes back, and she catches him, and he starts strangling her, and the cops come, and then he realizes, oh, my God, he did it. I'm missing plot points here.
Yeah,
like,
I was going to say, keep going.
And then he realizes that the wife went away but left the jewelry behind, and then the cops come and he tries to kill Jeffries, but he did it.
And he did it. Well, yeah.
More or less, I'm out of order. But
it's okay. For the most part, you're on the right track.
Yeah, oh, there's the trunk. He notices, yeah. Jeffries notices the trunk in the window,
yeah.
And he's like, I think the body's in the trunk.
Yep.
And then the cop's like, nah, it's not in the trunk. And then he's like, how do you know? Then Lisa's like, why would she leave the jewelry behind if she was going, why would she leave a wedding ring? He also kills a dog. what's his name? Schmeichelfeimer.
I actually don't.
I was saying it before. Not the dog's name, the murderer's name.
Oh, Thorwald.
Thorwald.
I was going to say, I don't know if the dog has a name. It might actually. I can't remember.
Let's call it Snuffles.
Snuffles, sure.
Okay. Hitchcock, 1954.
It's pretty good.
Created at what? Like, it was kind of like the start of his.
It was one of his earlier films. I think it was actually.
No, not at all.
No, I was going to say, I mixed up the earlier and later films.
This was kind of like the start of like the golden generation.
The golden years.
He did this,
will.
And then he did well. But he did
And then after this was Vertigo, Rear Window. Right?
After this was Psycho, and then I'm pretty sure he did Rope around the same time. And yes. Then Vertigo was 50.
Okay.
Well, so there you go. Then Birds later. Yes, so it was all kind of like that golden era of suspense.
Of course.
That he did it.
It's funny because a lot of I love learning about Hitchcock as a director because he was such a strange character. According to Thelma Ritter, who plays Stella in the film, the insurance nurse, Jeffrey's because he's broken his leg. Apparently, Alfred Hitchcock never told actors and actresses if he liked what they did in a scene. But apparently, if he didn't like it, quote, he looked like he was going to throw up. He almost became physically ill.
Yeah.
Which I just think is pretty funny. I don't know. Because apparently, what was that quote he says? He says that he would treat actors like cattle. Like, he had no respect for actors at all. And people were still like, yeah.
Well, he was a strange guy because I've seen a few Hitchcock films. I watched a couple.
Have you just?
I've passed and I watched a couple in preparation for this show just because one's on my back.
Yeah, of course.
I've seen Rope and Vertigo a while ago, and then I watched Dilemma and Strangers on a Train. Hitchcock is just a funny, strange dude. I think the way he makes films is the most interesting way because he would storyboard the entire film to completion before making it.
Yeah.
And he went on record going like, the shooting of the film was the most boring part to me because in his head he'd already got it done.
Yeah.
So he'd do the script 100% and then do the storyboard with like everything, like camera movement, camera placement, actors, everything. And then they'd just basically be like, here's the instruction manual, make it.
I love that also, because he would always just mess with actors and like not tell them the whole piece. There was one where in the scene with a man and woman on the fire escape, because it's really hot, they have the mattress outside.
Yeah, they're sleeping.
When it starts to rain, he didn't tell the actor. He told the actors conflicting advice. So he says, you run to the left, you run to the right. So then the scene where they sort of can't get the mattress inside is genuine. And he liked the take so much, they did it in the first take and he loved it because he thought it fit with the film perfectly. Mm. He just thought it was hilarious that they were sort of fighting then, trying to get the mattress in. He was like, yeah, leave that in.
He's a funny dude.
He made a lot
of films.
He did.
Like throughout the 30s, he started with like silent films, and then 30s he made a lot of stuff, and then he kind of started to gain more
notoriety
with basically like Rear Window and like those kinds of ones. I think Strangers on a Train, because that was in the 40s, that kind of kicked it off.
Well, it's interesting that Rear Window is actually one of the films that was sort of lost to time a bit because it didn't. I don't think it was shown in Australia until the mid 80s, I believe, actually, because there was some deal with the contract of. Oh, there was something with the film that they couldn't show it after that. And so there's no. The trailer for the film's been lost, and a lot of the
negatives.
Yeah, a lot of the negative was. It says I've got it written here. It was damaged considerably because the dye had faded in the 60s. Huh. So there were worries that the film wouldn't be preserved.
Mm. The version we watched was very high definition.
Exactly,
so.
But yeah. So luckily, some experts were able to restore the film nearly to its original.
Yeah,
but it's still out there that the original has kind of been lost. So the version we watched, even though it looks great, still isn't the way he actually intended it to look, which I think is interesting.
I mean, when you've been making films that old, there's going to be stuff that's like lost to time. Like, you've got there's all the stories of the Doctor Who episodes. There's whole chunks of the first ever episodes of Doctor Who which are just like
just
never
missing. Yeah.
To be found again because they're just gone.
Because, yeah, well, it is interesting that people assume that, you know, everything's saved and stored, but a lot of the time it really isn't.
You can't save and
yeah,
fill.
Exactly.
What are you talking
about? I don't know. I do think it's interesting. Also, because the whole set is also sort of a feat in itself.
Yeah.
It was unbelievably expensive to make. I think most
of... So they made
most
the whole apartment.
The whole block was purposefully made for the film, and I believe he reused it in some of his other films.
Oh, I'd do that as well.
I think. Because all the apartments in Thorwald's building had electricity, running water, and could be lived in.
Of course they did.
1,000 arc lights were used to simulate sunlight.
Yeah.
And the crew could make the changeover from day to night in 45 minutes. They just go, right, flip the switches, and it would just suddenly go from day to night in... under an hour.
Less than ideal.
Well, yeah, but it was still, you know, kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So it was all shot on the one set. So there was months and months of planning and construction. Mm. The actual courtyard, I think, was like 98 feet wide, 185 feet long, 40 feet That's high, cool. And there was 31 apartments. I believe almost all of them were furnished.
Of course they were. Of course, even the ones you never see at all.
Of course. But yeah, it's really interesting because some of the buildings are like, yeah, 5 or 6 stories high, and they were all just quickly, just put those up. Yeah, we'll film that. And yeah, it was shot quickly on the heels of Dial-In for Murder.
Yeah.
Just a few months after. And so he was just like, right, let's get into it. And James Stewart was like, yeah, I'll do another one.
He's like, all right,
we'll give it a
Dial-In for Murder. That's all right.
Of all the Hitchcock films that James Stewart was in, of which he was in 4, I believe, I think he said this was his favorite.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, of all the ones I've watched, I think Vertigo is my favorite. If you haven't seen Vertigo,
I haven't seen it.
It is
fantastic.
But it is, like, Rear Window was very good. Because what Hitchcock does really, really well is simple stories.
That are told
that
in such
a masterful
way.
So streamlined, but they're just like, they're so gripping that you can't help but just like sit down and watch. Because I really, watching a lot of them in the past and more recently after we watched Rear Window, you notice that Hitchcock is really concerned with like less so the like who in terms of murder. He's not as concerned with, oh, who did the murder? He's concerned with why and how. It's why did they do the murder and how are they going to get away with it? Because it's like, Rear Window is kind of an exception, but with Dial-In for Murder, with Rope, with Strangers on a Train, the murder happens, you know who's done it, you know why they've done it, but it's how are they going to get away with it and how is it all going to come like crashing down? It's not like a whodunit mystery, but Rear Window is kind of a... It's kind of a whodunit, but at the same time, you know Thorwald's done the thing from the early on.
As you're watching it, you're like,
I kind of
guessed. Maybe he didn't do it. Or maybe he did. Or maybe... Oh, hang on. And that's what makes the
film
so captivating. That being
said, I remember when he came in and out with the suitcase, I was like, yeah, I think he's chopped up the suitcase. And then you tried to do a little thing. You went like, oh, I don't remember.
I don't remember,
you know, man.
Who knows?
It Nick's opinion?
Oh, well, I mean,
fake facts got a little bit of...
Come on, you've got to get on it.
Nick's opinions?
But dozing off.
Do you ever look at someone and wonder what is going on inside
Hitchcock.
Their head?
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. Your opinions.
I like it.
It's good.
In the grand ranking of all the Hitchcock films I've seen, definitely up.
It's
like,
higher up.
It's not number one. I think Vertigo's number one. It's definitely number two.
Okay, that's good.
I don't know if you want to talk about like cinematography later or whatever, but like I just love how the entire thing is literally... You forget as the film goes on that it's all from the apartment. It's like you lose that sense of... You lose that realization as it goes on because you're just so... You're like in the mind of Jeffries that you just forget it's literally just shot from this one space.
Yeah.
And if the camera were to exit that space, it would seem weird.
Yeah, it does.
Like if the camera at any point... Like when it goes... there's a couple times when it goes down.
Yeah.
At the end when the cops come, when he falls. Mm. Well, that's why it goes down, because he falls out the window. I forgot to mention that. He falls out, he gets pushed out the window.
Oh, who can remember that?
But it like feels weird. It's like you're taken out of this like space because now you're in a different area. It's, you're no longer in the apartment. I just really liked how
Hitchcock
normalized that kind of like bottle. You're bottled inside that one space.
It's a very creative way to shoot a film. That although all this set was built, the camera moves maybe, I don't know, a few meters in total of the film. And it's just that one angle.
And it only just zooms in if you're zooming into apartments. And that's how it creates that voyeurism where you're looking through Jeffrey's eyes. But yes, I really, really loved it. If anyone, I guess we just spoiled it, but you know, watch it if you want to.
I think even if it's spoiled, you should still watch it just because it holds up really well.
It does. I'll talk later about... You forget it was made in like 1954.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was going to talk about the significance of the film's creation a little bit later.
Okay.
So I think, you know what you should do now?
Our next song?
Oh, what? Yeah, I mean, all right, if we have to.
Okay.
Oh, well, don't sound too excited.
Okay.
Right, the next song is Shaboom by The Crew Cuts, which was a chart topper of 1954, which was the same year of, you know, Rear Window's release. It was a great.
Yay.
You know what song this, you know what soundtrack this song was also in?
It was Don't
Worry, Darling. Ooh.
Don't go there, sister.
When I asked my grandmother what she thought of Don't Worry, Darling, her response was, don't bother watching. Let's let the song play out.
Absolutely savage, Lorraine.
Sorry, Sir Alfred Hitchcock.
Alfred Hitchcock. Come on, man.
I'm trying my best.
God rest his soul.
Hallelujah. Praise be.
Right. Fake facts.
It's time for it. Let's get into it.
Max says, how many facts?
Enough.
How many?
Six.
Max has six facts. One of them is fake. If I get the fake one, I win a prize.
You do win a prize. It's a pretty good prize.
Pretty good prize.
I like it.
Okay, let's go.
All right.
Facts about the film. Rear Window.
Rear Window.
Not any film.
Yeah.
The one, because we're talking about Rear Window today.
And that's what makes the show so interesting.
Really?
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. So, Hitchcock originally wanted his role in the film to be the husband of Miss Torso, who returns from the army. However, he didn't want to write himself in a role that seemed self-congratulatory. So instead, he wrote himself as the role as the man who fixed the clock, fixes the like grandfather clock in the songwriter's apartment.
Yeah,
because of course he
cameos in all his films.
Yeah, exactly. He's like the Stan Lee of his time. Truly.
Well, yeah, it's always nice when he's in it and he's
you
like,
go, oh, there he
he's
is.
Like, there he is.
So yeah,
it's hard to miss.
So yeah, originally he had a different small cameo role, but he thought, oh, that seems a bit too weird. So I'll write myself as this guy. That seems to fit more with the film.
Good going.
Yep. One of the photographs on the wall in Jeff's apartment is a photograph of him standing in front of an aircraft during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And James Stewart, actually served as a U.S. Army Air Force pilot during the war, flying missions as a B-24 pilot. So that photo is actually sort of has a bit of a double meaning there, that he actually was familiar with the aircraft as he served.
I'll take that. Yeah. I believe that. Yeah.
Right, Sir Alfred Hitchcock, you gotta say sir, gave Georgine Darcy, who plays Miss Torso, free range to choreograph her own dance moves for the character. So she just sort of did whatever she wanted, sort of improvised it. Hitchcock's only restriction was he actually didn't want her to take any dance lessons because he wanted to maintain sort of the imperfection that she's sort of an amateur dancer and just does a bit of fun around the house.
I like that.
Interesting, yep.
I like that.
While shooting, Sir Alfred Hitchcock, only worked in Jeff's sort of apartment, and the other actors and actresses in other apartments wore flesh-coloured earpieces so that he could radio directions to them.
Okay.
And so he could sort of say, right, extras start moving around now, you start doing this, da-da-da.
Okay.
And so, because he didn't want to have to shout, because that'd be a bit annoying, so he just radioed the directions with the little earpieces.
Yeah.
In the short story in which this movie is based, it's not revealed until the last line that the hero has a broken leg. Which is an interesting twist.
See, I knew it was based off a short story, and I did go home and just like look up how short the story is.
Mm.
It's like 300 pages.
Yeah.
That's not a short story. That's a novel.
You compare it to like Stephen King's The Stand or something, and
yeah,
yes,
but
it
you
is
compare
a short
anything
story.
To The Stand is a short story. You can compare War and Peace to The Stand. It's a short story. But yeah, it was like 300 and something pages. That's not a short story.
Well, anyway, I get a very prolific writer. I had a lot of ideas. So I thought that was interesting. And that was in the film, I think that could have been a very interesting sort of twist.
I mean, like,
as well.
How would you do that?
I have no idea, but it could have been interesting.
Oh, God.
And there's one more fact. There's actually a 1998 TV movie remake of the film starring Christopher Reeves.
Is there really?
Yes, who's best known for his role in the 1970s Superman films. Don't look it up.
I'm not.
Apparently, the remake was received terribly. People absolutely hated it. They said, why on earth was this made? The original was already kind of perfect. Like, there's really no need for this. And yeah, it was a made-for-TV movie, so already off to a great start. And yeah, Christopher Reeves. But in this, so in this version is that he's actually paralyzed and in a wheelchair. And I didn't really look that much into it because there's not that much written on it now? Because the reviews were so terrible for it.
Can I guess now?
If you have to.
I think the last one's fake.
Do you want to lock in that answer?
Well, I get two tries because you've got six.
Okay.
And I feel like you're waffling on a bit there.
Yeah, so do you want to lock that in?
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm not lying. There is a 1998 remake of the film. Yeah, well, you got to watch out for that.
Wait, okay. Damn it. Go through the five. I didn't ask you to do six.
Well, I was on a roll. Okay. Hitchcock originally had a different role for the film. Mm. One of the photographs in the apartment is James Stewart in World War II, the aircraft that he flew.
It's too hot.
Well, come on, you got to get with it. Get with the program. After you got hit by the tomato sauce, you've been down all day. He gave the actor playing Miss Torso free range to do whatever dance move she wanted, except he didn't allow her to get dance lessons because he was like, nah, it's got to be cool, you know, look better for the film. They only worked in Jeff's apartment and the other actors had earpieces so he could radio directions.
I don't feel like they had earpieces. Short story. Back then.
Do you want to lock in that as your answer? Well, you're wrong again.
Damn it!
So, do you want to see what you would have won?
Yeah.
It's a good one, too.
Yeah.
It's a signed photo of Sir Alfred Hitchcock, not signed by him. That would be outrageous.
It's signed by Tommy Wiseau.
That would be outrageously expensive.
I need this to pair with my Christopher Lloyd one.
Well, you didn't win fake facts.
Oh, no.
Tell you what, you might get another chance later.
All right, I'll
So we'll just
it there.
Leave it there on the desk.
Leave it there. Look at him. Look at his little face.
Yeah, I mean, come on, it wouldn't be signed by Alfred Hitchcock. Do you have any idea how expensive that would be?
I don't know. All right, mystery segment.
Mystery segment. So, taking you back, we're going to play, of course, Mr. Sandman,
which
is a 1954 hit. But, of course, this is a cover, and you'll see why when we get the clip going. That's not even close to the right thing.
That's what you put in the thingy.
No, I didn't.
That's what you have in the folder. It says mystery segment.
All right, we'll tell you what.
Wait, hold. No, hold up. I can fix this.
You can fix this. Yeah. Do we keep talking about Rear Window then while you try and fix
that? No, I've got it.
You got it?
I've got it. You put the wrong thing in that folder, man.
I don't think I did, but sure.
Is this right?
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's play this out, and it'll make sense in a minute, so we'll be back soon. Just a quick one there. That was, of course, Mr. Sandman. I did a little clever thing there because it's like in 1955, that's the first song that, you know,
Marty
hears when he goes back. Yeah. So I thought that'd be a bit funny and clever. And also that'll link up to something else later. Ooh. What I wanted to discuss for the mystery segment is for the first half is the significance of this film, because all of the sound in this movie is diegetic. So that means that it all comes from the world of the film.
Yes.
And interestingly, this was the first film that had sort of consistent a consistent soundtrack throughout the entire film. So there's not right. There's not a point where there isn't noise in the film, basically. And this was actually the first film to fully utilize that. All sound comes from the world of the movie. The only exception is the orchestra music from the beginning of the film.
Yep.
Other than that, it's all from the start of the film, and it's all recorded from around the apartment complex. So that was what made this film very sort of significant in filmmaking, was that it was the first film to really do that and do it, I guess, as successfully as it did, which I think is just kind of interesting.
I like that.
It is interesting.
It's a nice little tidbit there.
What was I going to say? I can't think of anything, because basically... like all the sound, right, is very carefully constructed, and I think it really adds to the film. I couldn't think of anything.
Good, was good.
I was on a roll there, and I couldn't think of it.
It's anyway. Good. Well, you know, I don't want to interrupt your mystery segment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I talk about cinematography and stuff,
sense.
But
it
I
makes
don't
sense.
Want to interrupt
I was going to say that even though the film had very very successful around the box office and 4 Oscar nominations, it didn't actually win anything.
Yeah, Hitchcock never won an Oscar.
Yeah, which is interesting. And especially it didn't even get a nomination for the set design, which you would think, especially for 1954, it probably would have.
Yeah.
But no, it didn't.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Hitchcock got like an Achievement Award for cinema and he never won an Oscar once. Like Psycho, Rear Window, I think Dial M for Murder, they were all nominated and they were just like, nah. Sucked in.
Yeah, it was very strange. Another little fact is that when Lisa orders dinner from 21, I had to explain this to you because...
Yes, because I was lost.
You were lost.
I was struggling.
You were Matthew McConaughey.
Weeping.
You were dazed and confused. You had no clue. 21 Club was an exclusive American restaurant and bar at the time of filming, and it moved to various venues with different names in New York. It was
22, 23.
Yeah, 23, 24.
They went 19 one point. People got confused.
Yeah, they had to go back up. It had various different names and was located on the West 52nd Street since 1929. Interestingly, during the COVID-19 pandemic in March of 2020, they actually sort of shut down the main business and it hasn't been in the same form ever since. So I think that's kind of interesting. From when I started to study the film, how much has changed in the time since that. So I thought that was another
all because of you.
Sure. I also thought this was funny that in an interview,
Sir Alfred Hitchcock
claimed that he always felt a bit of sympathy.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
I don't know. It's okay. Keep going. We're not much time.
I'm trying. With all of his antagonists in his movies, he said that he felt particularly sympathetic towards Thorwald, who was minding his own business before Jeff interfered.
Minding his own business, murdering his wife.
But he went on to say that he hoped the audience would share his sympathy during the confrontation between Thorwald and Jeff. Thorwald asks him what he wanted and why he was doing this, Jeff remains silent. Hitchcock concluded the interview by saying, during that one moment, it really makes one think, you know, he's really kind of a bastard. It's like, well, all right. Which is kind of interesting that he has...
kind of a bastard.
That when he was... but delayed on the sense of that. I think it's interesting, though, that for Hitchcock's movie where he positions the audience to feel very much, you know, inside of the protagonist of the film, Jeffries, he actually is kind of siding with the antagonist, which I thought was an interesting sort of... thing to learn.
Well, I think that's one thing that Hitchcock does really well is like antagonists in his films always kind of ride that line. And it's like, who do you want to side with here?
Yeah.
And it always rides that kind of
that thin line between who you're feeling
more sympathetic towards. You haven't seen other Hitchcock films, I can't reference them, but like I don't know.
That's okay.
He does it constantly. I just love how Hitchcock uses women in his films, but he in a way that no one at the time would use female characters.
Oh, right, of course,
because they were usually stereotypical, like.
Yes.
Didn't really do much, but in Hitchcock films, not just Rear Window, they are very powerful and very.
When I was studying this film last year, there's a lot of interesting points about that and Hitchcock's view on gender roles and particularly McCarthyism throughout the Cold War and America and American society.
Because this is coming off. This is coming off World War II that the films are basically being made.
In the Cold War, in the height of sort of paranoia and McCarthyism, which is what makes the film particularly interesting. And you can tell I've studied this film.
Oh, yes.
Which, you know what? I reckon actually. it's time to jump into that. So if you'll play the jingle here,
is this,
I think we've
got to
go.
Number two?
We've got to go back from 1950 to a little closer in the present. So if you play this, I think it'll all make sense. So we're gonna go back again, and it'll all make sense in a minute.
Love Back to the Future.
Gotta go back.
Dua Lipa starts playing.
We're only going if something good is playing.
Let's Back to the Future. Can we see the Martian instead?
Are you kidding? First of all, the Martian looks like... Second of all, you've never
seen... Right, so for those who aren't familiar, that's a clip from Mr. Robot from the episode Don't Delete Me, which I was watching in 2021, the same year that I was studying Rear Window.
Okay, so that's
the connection.
So we
there.
Went back to the 50s and played the clip from Back to the Future, because that's what Marty McFly hears in Back to the Future. We had someone message say, why the male version?
Yes.
That's why.
Yep.
And then we went to early...
2021,
because that's from Mr. Robot,
the clip
which
where,
you listened to when you were studying.
Which I watched because in that episode where it's Back to the Future Day and that song starts playing, I thought that's a very clever segment.
That is very
I
clever.
Appreciated the
I
reference.
Like it. I like that as well. Yeah. Well done.
So that was, of course, what I was watching when I was studying Rear Window for year 12. And I
You're
wanted
doing
to
normal
that.
English like a plebeian.
Like a common man, like a normal person. So I can't even hear you all the way up there on your high horse up there.
Yes, I'm all the way up here.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was very interesting studying the film because, and it sort of gave me a bit of an upper hand, but I wanted to discuss the film for this week because I'm more, you know, somewhat familiar with it. The only thing I didn't like about studying it was that the assessment task was a creative piece.
Oh, that would be good.
And it was to write an additional scene for the film.
Of what? What did you do?
So the prompt that I chose, I couldn't find it. Otherwise,
no.
I would have brought it in. But it was an assessment thing, so I don't have
boo.
A copy of it. But the scene was, the chosen prompt was Stella being investigated by the police after
right,
the events
that's
of the
cool.
film.
I like that.
And so trying to relate that back to the themes of paranoia, voyeurism, and
but also
McCarthyism.
Like a woman's role where she's given more
course.
Agency and
of course.
A bit
so
more powerful.
I thought it was interesting, and I have a piece here that
it's
I wrote
the two men
on Lars Thorwald, of course, the protagonist of the film.
Mm.
And I think it's interesting that I think I've done the right job.
Yes. What grade did you get?
I actually don't remember. I think it was all right, though.
That's what they say when they get a bad grade.
I think it was all right. But it's interesting looking at Lars Thorwald because he's essentially what Hitchcock is trying to convey to his audience is that he's seen as what's expected of a man of the 1950s. He works to support his family, rarely spends time at home, and he also represents Jeff's fear of marriage, that he comes home to his wife who's bedridden, constantly sort of belittles him and insults him. And that's, of course, what Jeff's fear is with Lisa. And that's why he, of course, fears marriage.
Gotcha.
It's interesting because, of course, he's initially shown to be what is expected of a working married man. But as the film progresses, it becomes clear that he's actually the antithesis of these ideals. And significantly, Thorwald is actually the only character that becomes aware that they are being watched throughout the film.
Yes, true.
Which I think is interesting. He also has very few lines throughout the film. I think
probably just at the end.
Yeah, I think even some of the extras in the film have more than he does.
Yeah,
of course,
it's like in not discreet. What's the word?
When he's
what's the word when he's you can't. You know, when it's like you know when someone's talking and you can't really hear what they're saying.
Oh, just like
and the subtitles just say like
background noise.
No,
or
they say
speaking. Oh, it's like Brad Pitt
indiscriminately
in,
or something.
In Snatch, or it's you know speaking incoherently.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that his story is primarily told through sort of his body language rather than dialogue, and Jeffrey's trying to piece together what happened, which is interesting.
Well, yeah, that's like it comes down to the whole thing that you are Jeffrey's in the film, point of view shots, stuff like that, panning shots, and you know Jeffrey's doesn't know what he's saying because he can't hear him. He's 20 meters away from him through two walls, so you can't hear what he's saying, and it's like you're creating those own judgments and you're coming to your own conclusions from only what he can see.
Of
course. And that's why it's so masterfully done.
Yeah, exactly. It's also interesting, I've got written here in my year 12 notes that I have to admit, when I was going through and I looked through my folder, I went, yeah, I've
done the exam?
I know, I was like, I've done a good job organising my folders here, because I love a good organised filing system.
Because last year, when you were writing these notes, you weren't going, oh, this will be good for the exam. You're going, this will be good for possibly a radio show
this will
in
be good
future
for the
27th
fraud.
Episode of The Fan the Fraud, or
yeah,
like a
it'll
name
be good,
that,
yeah.
I don't know, someone else might come
yeah.
up with.
Yeah, you ain't seen nothing yet or something, I'll, you know, write that down. Something else interesting is that Thorwald, he always appears hunched and hiding his face from the camera, unlike the other extras, as if he has something to hide, and
because
also
he
is in often the shadow of his apartment as well, which is interesting. Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. And I've written a little paragraph here, which, you know, this was, you know, a little practice thing.
I'll pretend, who's your teacher and who's your English teacher?
Miss Boney, if she's listening in.
All right, I'll be Miss Boney.
Thank you, you're a good teacher. Cool. All right, so this is my assessment. All right.
Come on, Max, tell me what you wrote.
Throughout the film, Thorwald is shown to be regressing towards the darkness in his apartment and away from the view of others.
Speak
Hitchcock's
up!
It's not my fault! Hitchcock symbolizes
Project.
That Thorwald is becoming someone as juxtaposed with the anti-communist sentiment and 1950s lifestyle as possible. Contrasting to Jeffrey's at the beginning of the film, Thorwald is seen to be constantly arguing with his wife, what Jeffrey fears in his relationship with Lisa. Continuing with the theme of being trapped in a relationship, Hitchcock shows Thorwald framed through his windows, completely entrapped. And additionally, after Thorwald strangles the dog of the upstairs couple, he's the only neighbour to not leave his apartment or come to the window, only being seen lighting a cigarette in his apartment, further representing his distance from the other apartment dwellers. And significantly, Thorwald's final scene in the film, where he attacks Jeffreys in his apartment, he's the only apartment dweller to not only recognise Jeffreys, but also to confront him about his voyeuristic tendencies.
Bit derived, B plus.
Look, I'll take it.
No, it was good. Yeah.
So I've got a whole bunch of notes on that. A lot of them are kind of terrible because I wasn't.
Well, did you
write
about in the exam?
No, in the exam I chose to write on, I believe, The Crucible and The Dressmaker.
Ah, okay. Well,
The Crucible I liked. The Dressmaker I found incredibly dry and uninteresting,
yeah.
If I'm being honest.
Well, I love how Rear Window is staged like a theatre play.
I think it could work very well in a stage play.
And I think it's been adapted before, because a lot of Hitchcock films, which I didn't know until I kind of realised watching a few more of them, was a lot of them are based on plays or short stories or stuff already written stories. Hitchcock didn't like come up with the ideas himself.
No.
He just directed them.
Unbelievable.
But I'm not Rear Window, I think... Strangers on a plane. Whoa, on a train.
Snakes on a plane.
was like adapted from a play, and a lot of Hitchcock films like feel like they're theatrical productions. Like the characters have these kind of like stock personalities where their personas are very overly exaggerated, especially in Rear Window. Like. Mm. You've got Lonely Hearts, who's very like, oh, she's so sad and lonely, and the artist and the dancer and the couple and the honeymoon couple as well. Mm. It's all very, very theatrical at the way it's staged.
Well, I suppose it's also interesting considering Hitchcock's background in silent film, that a lot of the dialogue you can't hear or isn't that important. It's the body language of and the sort of set design that really tells the story.
That's
so
good.
I think that's also something to note. That's
another very good film that's kind of like Rear Window, Rope, which it's the shortest Hitchcock film, all filmed in one take.
Oh, right.
So it's one like soundstage, which is the apartment, and basically it's a long take the entire film. It's an hour and 20.
There was a lot of pressure.
And there's just one cut in the... So it's like 2K. There's one cut halfway through, which is masked.
Cut that you know of.
Well, it's masked very well. You kind of miss it if you... It's like blink and you miss it. But it's like it's one take film.
Yeah.
A film which is based on a play.
Yes.
But again, it's like Hitchcock... You just get those influences of theatre that kind of come into the way its characters and the way the dialogue's written, the way it's shot. It's just,
it's very pleasing,
easy to watch.
Yes.
People think Hitchcock films are like terrifying and they're really hard and confusing. They're actually very simple in their nature. They're very simple cinema.
Mm.
So go and watch them.
Go and watch
them. I recommend
them. And if you don't, there'll be trouble.
Before we go into Jeff's hip pick, I wanted to talk about the Fan the Fraud's connection to Hitchcock.
Oh yeah, okay. So
this
you said that, and I was intrigued,
yes.
As I assume all of our listeners
all
are
our
as
listeners
well.
Are. So, Saul Bass is a graphic designer from the late '40s, early '50s.
Yep.
He basically
He's best known for
best known for, he did a lot of logo designs of companies, but he was also best known for the poster of Vertigo. He worked as a type kind of consultant for Psycho. He also did the credits for Dial M for Murder and a couple other Hitchcock films. But his influence on cinema is huge because the credits of films before he kind of became working in cinema were usually useless. Like, no one cared about the credits. They're projected over the cinema, like the curtains.
Yeah.
It was basically credits over, then we'll pull the curtains and play the film. Yeah. And Saul Bass came in and he basically went, well, no, this can be like an art form in of itself. And he created the credits as their own part of the identity of the film.
Right.
So, like, with Dial M for Murder and with Vertigo, he worked on the credit sequences, which are, like, very gripping from the start to make you kind of catch your eye. But this all comes back to the fan of the fraud because right. the type which
because
I chose...
Because you are Saul Bass.
I am Saul Bass. The type which I chose for the fan of the fraud logo and the eye in the fan of the fraud logo, which is looking down the fraud, is inspired by Saul Bass. And I took inspiration from a few of his art pieces in the past and the way he composed it to make the fan of the fraud logo. Also, the colors. Also, the color scheme, the red and the yellow.
Yeah, I was going to say the color scheme looks very much like.
And then the
his
post
work.
Of this week was inspired by Saul Bass's art style. He also did the poster design for West Side Story, which is also where I took some inspiration from that.
Well, there you
and
go.
And hidden in our post for this week is also Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes, of course. It. Just like in all his films, just he's always just hidden in the background, just a small cameo.
But yeah, Hitchcock's got a connection to the fan, the fraud from the very, very beginning because the logo is the first thing I did.
Yeah.
There you go. Designed for the film.
And you know what the best thing about our logo is?
Yeah.
It's on our shirts and stickers.
And stickers. It will be on our shirts soon. I think the plan is now the shirts will be a Christmas gift.
Christmas gift.
I think that's the current logistics in terms of when we'll get the shirts out will be Christmas.
We're not saying which Christmas that is, though. Could be this year, could be next year, could be 10 years' time.
But we've got stickers.
We do have stickers.
And if you want stickers, if you want to put stickers up around your neighbourhood in places where it's legal,
yes,
not private property.
We should clarify that as long as it's legal.
Take some. We've got too many.
We're not too
We've got a lot.
Yeah, we do actually have quite a few.
But if you're going on a holiday, take some.
Yes, if you're going on a holiday, please let us know and make sure you put stickers wherever you're going.
Yes.
That's really important.
But t-shirts will, I think, end of this week, we're going to have the design finalized.
Right.
Sounds I'm saying good. That now because we need to get it done.
We do.
I think we'll have the t-shirts.
Have them ready for Christmas.
Ready for Christmas
gifts. Great gift for you, friends, family, loved ones, people you don't love.
Santa.
They'll love it too.
Maybe you could get it. Yeah, maybe for people you like, people you don't like.
Yeah. Everyone, and you know,
everyone
and,
fan the fraud
you can
t-shirt.
Be united by the fan the fraud,
exactly.
Officially licensed merchandise. I think, but
Jeff's
I'm trying to use some words this time, perhaps some syllables or maybe some consonants.
What are we doing? Right. You said there was another chance to win it.
Oh, I lied.
Can I have it?
Yeah, the oldest film we've covered on the show.
The most recent film we've covered, Uncut Gems. Is that the most recent?
No, I think it might be Private Desert. Or Nobody. Actually, yeah, probably Nobody.
No, Private Desert was last year.
So technically, Graveyard Shift was Nobody. Actually, yes. Yeah, Graveyard Shift
so
was
the most recent film we did was Graveyard Shift.
Which was
the
this
oldest
year.
One we did was Rear Window.
Yes.
We covered Rear Window today, 1954 Hitchcock, Alfred Hitchcock classic.
Sir Alfred Hitchcock.
Sir Alfred, I'm sorry.
There will be consequences.
Sir Alfred Hitchcock classic.
Yep.
Talked about cinematography, we talked about the film. Max talked about a lot of
studying the film.
Because he studied it.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic film. I recommend going and watching a lot of those older Alfred Hitchcock films. People think they're old, they'll be boring, they'll be slow. They hold up.
They're very suspenseful,
really gripping films,
of course.
And just from a filmmaking masterclass point of view, they're such they're made so simply, but they're just so gripping and so
enthralling.
Whoa!
Great minds think alike.
Same wavelength, baby. but we come to the end of our show today.
If you want the merchandise.
If you want the merch.
Please let us know. We've been saying that every week, but we need to get it done because these will make great Christmas gifts.
Yes.
Friends, family, relatives, people you love, people you don't love, people you used to love.
Exactly.
You know, everyone will love a bit of Fan the Fraud merchandise this Christmas.
And we've got 3 episodes left of the season.
Yep.
Next week's episode is a very special episode. It's going to be a bit different to our normal...
Normal
repertoire. It might also be airing on a different time slot to give us a little bit more time
yes,
for the show.
Yes, but we,
it might be a bit
of course,
longer.
We'll update you with whatever happens, whatever changes.
Happens. on our Instagram at the Found the Fraud Sin, all lowercase, no spaces for all the updates. Yes. Week after that, Christmas special, because we'll be in December.
That's true.
And then the season 3 finale, we've got some very special stuff planned for you.
Oh yeah,
for the finale, I am personally wetting my pants for this episode.
You didn't have to clarify that on air.
I am so excited.
All right, that's fair.
But we'll let the closing suite of Rear Window named Lisa play out, and when we see you back next week, it's going to be slightly different.
Well, we won't see you back.
Yeah, it'll be slightly different, possibly slightly different time, definitely a slightly different layout
vibe
to the show,
it's
going to be good.
Yeah.
And have a good evening. Watch your neighbours. Take a pair of binoculars and watch your neighbours.
Who knows what you'll
find
out.
Who knows? They might be killing someone.
They might be murderers, potentially.
I'm not. Are you?
Well, who knows? Alfred Hitchcock says it could happen to anyone.
I'm Alfred Hitchcock.
Sir Alfred Hitchcock. Unbelievable.
All right, we'll see you back next week.
Take it easy, everyone.
Take it easy.
And yeah, please message us for the Fair the Fraud Christmas merchandise.
If you want a t-shirt, message us.
Stickers are included with any purchase.
All
right. Take it easy, everyone.